headquarters in Baltimore, Maryland. At least I am. Rabbi Tendler, who's our guest today, is on our West Coast office in sunny Los Angeles. My name is Rabbi Zvi Goldberg. I'm glad that you joined with us. So we have these webinars once a month, usually the last Wednesday of each month at noon Eastern. And we record them and we put them up on the archives are on our website, star-k.org/videos. You can find them there. We love to talk to you. So you see on the, or chat with you, you see on the bottom right of your screen, there is a chat box. And if you have any questions, you can chat with us. If a couple people could let us know if they hear us, that way we know that we're coming through and we're not on mute. Okay, great. All right. Thank you very much, Yaakov and Miriam and Janet and Peret. Thank you so much. So today's topic is Yashan, which Rabbi Tendler is going to explain, describe. We don't have to have any jokes about it, right, Rabbi? Like it's already old stuff already. It's old stuff.
I mean, once you start with that, you're never going to end.
We can skip those jokes, right? Okay.
I mean, they'll come up. There's no question they're going to come up.
Okay. All right. So the way that we titled our – let me just mention, if you want to call in, if you're having some trouble with the sound on the computer or whatever, for whatever reason you want to call, it's 267-279-9000, 267-279-9000. And conference is number 132-689-4 5 6. One more time, 132-689-4 5 6. So that's for just phone only. Okay, Rabbi Tendler. So let's begin. Where does it take us this dive into the Yashan discussion?
So as you said, it's an old topic. But you know, anytime you use the word old, it's going to be assumed to be a joke, even though it's not really the case. But right. You know, this time of year. It's really starting already at the end of the summer, Rosh Hashanah time. Our hotline, everybody's kashrus hotlines, every kashrus agency, on all the kashrus chats, all the chatter starts talking about Yashan, 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 Yashan. It seems that a lot of people are interested in Yashan. A lot of people, as they say, keep Yashan or don't keep Yashan. But it seems that a lot of people are confused about what exactly Yashan is. People think everything that's Pas Yisrael must be Yashan, and everything that's Yashan must be Pas Yisrael, when it's reality to have as much to do with each other as milk and meat, like totally nothing to do with each other. And I guess we just, in our discussions, Rabbi Goldberg, you and myself, we thought it might be helpful to have a webinar and discuss what exactly is Yashan and when does it apply? Where does it apply? Why do some people, as they say, keep it? And some people, as they say, don't keep it, and right. Try to cut through some of the confusion in that. And then after that, and maybe not necessarily in this order, maybe after that, we'll go through probably the most confusing aspect of Yashan, that is for those who keep Yashan, using the guide and figuring out which items are Yashan and which items aren't Yashan, which seems to have a lot of confusion associated with it.
Well, that was your line in our email was, how do you use the guide without needing a PhD? Because it's a complicated story.
Right, it is complicated. It is complicated. There's no way that there's a lot of resources out there that try to simplify as much as possible.
It is technical, but that's your job today, is try to make it bring down to...
Right, so hopefully we'll explain that and clarify it, and everyone could walk out of here with that less gray hairs on their head about Yashan. Okay, so I guess let's start with what is Yashan? Right, so Yashan literally means old. In case no one has figured that out yet. And really, it's a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says in Pashas Lashem, V'lechem v'kal v'karm l'soich l'oletzem yom hazeh, that the new grain, when grain is harvested, that grain is not allowed to be eaten. Midaraisa, it's a pasuk, not allowed to be eaten until after Pesach, until the first day Chol Hamoed Pesach, when the times of Beis HaMikdash, they used to bring the Karban Omer. At some point during the day, they bring the Karban Omer. After that point, all the grain that had been harvested from before Pesach is allowed to be eaten, and before that, it's not allowed to be eaten.
Why? In, why?
Why? Yeah, why is there such a mitzvah in the Torah?
Right.
So you know, you can look in the Chinuch. The Chinuch brings various reasons for the mitzvah, but you know, basically, let's just leave it at that. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I mean, let's. I don't want to get into the reasons why Kadosh Baruch Hu gave a mitzvah in the Torah. At the end of the day, we're doing Kadosh Baruch Hu said so. But really, is that he doesn't allow the Torah is not allowing the new grains to be consumed until after you have the ability to bring a carbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that provided it with you. Okay, but you know, we don't have to necessarily get into all those details. In Chutz La'aretz, where we have two Dezayantiv, so it would go, extend until the first day Chol HaMoed, and Eretz Yisrael would obviously be on the second Dezayantiv. Now, just a technical point, but through the webinar, we might come up to a practical nafkamina. At what point on the first day Chol HaMoed does it actually become mutter? If you would have a situation where that makes a difference, and well, I'll give you a story a little bit later of a situation where it made a difference. The answer is Shkia. That's actually a Mishnah in Sukkah, a Gemara in Sukkah, where it talks about that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, one of the takanas he made was a Sheyam and Nef Kuli Aser, that since Meher Yibana Beis HaMikdash, we don't know when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and we might end up in a situation where we could bring the Karbon Omer on the first day Chol HaMoed, so we wait until Shkia. This way, in case Beis HaMikdash gets rebuilt, Keharif Ayin, which we hope, and then they have a time to bring the Karbon Omer, and then things could become mutter. It's actually interesting, lady.
I'm curious to hear your story, what could make a difference in what time of day it becomes permitted. I mean, I guess you can't wait till the next morning for your whatever food. I don't know.
So I'd rather explain how the harvests work first. Okay, I think you'll understand the story a little bit better. So what does it mean harvested before Pesach? And that is something that this is the golden question where it confuses, as you know, a lot of people get confused about this because you have to know a little bit of how agriculture works. And as the way it works is the following, is that as we know, Pesach is the Chag HaAviv, when things start sprouting, and Shavuos is the Chag HaKatzir. In the Northern Hemisphere, at least, that is something that is predominantly true, is that everything gets harvested in the summer. So what that means is that the grains that get harvested in the summer, which, you know, in America and many parts of Europe, pretty much most Northern Hemisphere, June, July, beginning of August, that's pretty much the harvest season as we know it. Those grains, once they're harvested, are considered chadash, and they're not allowed to be eaten until after the following Pesach. So that's really how it comes up, is that you have grain that's harvested, let's say, in the middle, towards the end of the summer, July, August, etc. And that grain, you're really not allowed to eat it midaraisa, at least, you know, for those who keep yashin, and we'll talk about that, what that means in a minute, until after Pesach. So that means you have to hold on to that grain for 8 months or so and not be able to eat it until then. Now, mind you, the companies are not necessarily holding on to this grain. It's being harvested, it's being processed into flour, it's being put into products, and those products are hitting the market already at the end of August, beginning of September. All have just been freshly harvested in the month or 2 months prior. So that's where you have a lot of products that are going to be in the market then that are produced from that grain. And for those who are Makban and Yashan, they don't want to eat those products until after Pesach. At the same time, people who are Makban Yashan, companies that are Makban Yashan, have to make sure that they don't get any of those products or any of those flours into their facilities, again, until after Pesach. So they have to make sure they have enough stock from the previous summer's harvest to tide them over until after Pesach the next year.
Okay,
so that's pretty much how the harvests work. Now, I'll give you one more technical halacha in detail, and then I'll tell you the story how it made a nafkamina. When are grains planted? Okay, this is a question that makes a very big difference, and the reason is the following, is that the halacha really is that other than just being harvested and holding on to the grain until after Pesach, the first day Chol HaMoed passes, if grains are planted before Pesach, as long as they're in the ground before Pesach, and then you go through Pesach, when they're eventually harvested in the summer, they do not have any chadash concerns. So now we ask the question, okay, so when are, well?
As long as they took root.
So when are these grains planted? How long before Pesach, when are grains typically planted? So we know Pesach is Chav Aviv, that's when they start sprouting, but when are they actually planted in the ground? So the answer is there's generally two types of crops in the United States of America and other countries also, but there's known as winter crops and spring crops. Winter crops, interestingly enough, are planted in the winter, actually right around now, October, November. They plant wheat, especially in many of the colder states. They plant wheat now. It sits in the ground dormant the entire winter, and until July, it sits from the ground from around now until July, and it's harvested in July. So that grain, since it was planted long before Pesach and already took root in the ground long before Pesach, once it eventually gets harvested, there's no chadash concerns with those plants at all. And those are known as winter crops. And what products have winter crops? We'll get to that in a minute. And then there's spring crops. Spring crops are, which as most of us are used to in our own home gardens, for those of us who have, you plant them in the spring, which is around April, May, end of March, if you're lucky, if you live in a warmer area. That's when they're planted, and they are harvested like two and a half, 3 months later in July and August. Now, when those crops actually get planted, it can make a very big difference, because there's a machlokes how long before the first day Chol HaMoed it takes for things to get take root. So there's a machlokes whether it's 3 days or 2 weeks. That's pretty much the 2 days. So if something is planted the day before Erev Pesach, it could be, if you planted it in enough time, you can have 3 days before the first day Chol HaMoed, and then you don't have a chadash concern. Now, as much as Pesach had late the last 2 years, and we don't have to bring Rabbi Heber into the conversation to see how late Pesach can actually get, but even at the latest Pesachs, it doesn't seem that we were ever lucky enough that Pesach was late, you know, late enough in April where they got all the grain planted in the ground before Pesach, which would pretty much avoid any Yashin concern whatsoever. So far, it hasn't happened, at least not in America. And how do we know this information anyways? And the reason we know this information is because the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, for those who don't know, they have excellent and very exacting records from all the, obviously not every single farmer in the country, but they know when the grain plantings and the grain harvests are taking place. They track it. It's incredible the detail, how much they track and how much they're able to track and how much information they have. So we really know, you know, when things are being planted and when things are being harvested. So now I can tell you the story that I had is that we have a company that makes grains. Actually, here in Baltimore, Migrish Farms is Yosef Hertzmark. He has a company that produces artisan and all types of fancy flowers from different grains. He owns land out in Baltimore County. And he called me up the day of Bedikas Chametz. And he tries to make all his grains be Yashan. And he called me the day before Bedikas Chametz and said he's been so busy, right? He has a whole crop here that he just hasn't got around to planting. Is it too late? Mm-hmm. So I called her Reinemann because I was under the impression we pask in 2 weeks, but Reinemann said, and turns out most Paiskim say in the Chutzlarts anyways, we pask in 3 days. So we actually made a cheshbon almost to the minute that he was able to get it into the ground 72 hours before, you know, before the first day Chol HaMoed, and literally down to the wire.
3 days. Okay.
He literally down to the wire. He got it into the ground, so those crops would be able to be considered Yashan.
Okay, so that's a producer. But the average consumer,
it's not going to make a difference. Right? Average consumer is not going to make a difference.
Let me just mention for 1 second that we're going to take some questions. If anybody wants to chat here with questions, as soon as we can. Panina wants to know what's the phone number again. So let me give that to you one more time. It's 267-279-9000 with code 132-689-456. There you go. Rabbi Chapman put it up on the screen so you can see it there. Aliza is asking which kind. Aliza's from Israel, so in Israel, everything is always Yashin, right? But anyway,
right.
Countries don't have a problem with Yashin because of the planting season is that country. In that country, or any country that is never a problem.
Answer is yes and no. First of all, I don't know the story in the Southern Hemispheres. I'm not familiar enough to know what goes on in Australia, how the plantings work there, because they really work the opposite way. So I don't know. But the question is a little bit deeper than what she means. And the reason is the following is that before we get into, we'll discuss why a lot of people are, so to speak, makbid, not makbid. And it seems like traditionally none of our grandparents, you know, I don't think anybody here were makbid on such a thing as Yashan. And the reason for that is simply because in the areas of the countries that Jews used to live in Europe, more northern countries, not southern Europe, it's very cold. So in cold areas, you don't have a long enough harvest season to be able to do a spring crop. So most of those countries did winter crops. So there really was very little issue of Yashan in those areas. And it's like that in many states in the United States also. North Dakota doesn't really have much spring crops because they don't really have much of a planting season. So that's why in Europe, in the way where Jews came from in many countries, there was very little of an issue. Now, that has changed with all the advances they made in agriculture nowadays, and with not necessarily just GMOs, but seeds now are a major industry, developing seeds that have certain genetic codes and DNA and things like that, that react and respond and grow more efficiently. They're able to plant things that grow much faster nowadays and with different chemicals that they use. So even in countries and places where traditionally they always used to have a winter crop, the last number of years, last decade or so, they started having spring crop. And I'll give you an example. In Europe, for example, it was always assumed until personally, it was always assumed, let's say something like beer. Beer, for those who don't know, is made from grain. It's made from barley. And definitely would be something that would be of a concern for those who are Makban and Yashan. But traditionally, it's always been the, so to speak, the word on the street amongst the European Ashkachas definitely that beer is not a problem because in Germany, the areas where they harvest the malt, where they harvest the barley, it's always going to be a winter crop. And it's not an issue anymore. In the last couple of years, it came to light that, no, they started making spring crops also because they're able to have crop, you know, seeds, barley seeds that are planted more efficiently. And now a lot of that has changed.
So and when you're saying less of a problem over time, becoming more of an issue.
Well, yes, it definitely seems that those Yashin, as they say, is the newfound chumrah for an old issue. But it seems that it definitely has become more and more of an issue as time goes on. And there's a number of reasons for that. Let's talk briefly about the reasons why people are or aren't Makban Yashin before we get into the list and different products. And the reason is the following, is that obviously everyone says the first thing is that no one ever grew up being Makban and Yashin, which is true. But the difference is that it was much less of a problem many years ago. Even in the United States, during the years of the Cold War, which was a few years ago. I don't remember the Cold War. I'm not sure if you do, Rick Goldberg, but you know, you're so old. No, anyways.
The Civil War, I might remember, but you know.
Oh, the Civil War. Okay. So the United States used to keep tremendous stockpiles of grain for strategic reasons and whatever other reasons, a lot of different issues. They used to keep stockpiles of grain, and to the point where all the grains that were hitting the market, they would do first in, first out. So the grains that would hit the market were usually years old. They would fill the silos with the unprocessed grains, and they would process them on demand whenever they needed it. So Yashin was not really much of an issue, even with the spring crops, because they had such a large stockpile. Towards the end of the Cold War, though, someone told me it was earlier than that. Maybe you would remember, maybe in the 60s or 50s. I don't know. So the United States stopped that, and they started just selling it off to other countries. And right now, the way it works is that the grain that's harvested hits the market pretty quickly. So that is, you know, that has changed. A lot has changed over the last X number of years, however many years it was, where it seems that becoming more and more of an issue. But it's something that we weren't necessarily aware of until Rabbi Yosef Herman, Zecharno Livracha, looked at it one day and said, hey, wait a second, there's a lot of information out there that is available to consumers. And he realized that this is a much bigger problem than people may think. So the way the story goes, he went to Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov and he asked them, should I look into this? Because he realized what would happen if he'd look into it. And he realized that the USDA and the companies really have exacting information when everything is harvested, which in which case would become a real issue for people. So the question was, he asked them, should I look into this or shouldn't I look into this? And the answer the Psaki he gave, which he wrote over many times, that they told him he should look into it. And he did. And that's where he came to publish his guide, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But that's how this whole thing came about. I think, at least in Chutz Laaretz, single-handedly, he has the schus for Mizaka the Rabbim that people just didn't realize. And anyone who now who's Makban and Yashin, I think it's really a schus to him. And that he was one who really brought this issue to light. Now in Eretz Yisrael, it's a very different story. And the reason is the following, is that there's three main reasons why people are not Makban and Yashin. Number one is that there's a machlokes whether it applies in Chutz Laaretz. Number two, it's machlokes whether it applies in fields or crops that are owned by non-Jews. And number three, it's because there's a svek sveka, meaning we don't really know what's what. So if it's a svek sveka, we don't know what's what. So everyone decides to be makel. So with Rabbi Herman's guide, the fact that we don't know becomes a little bit shaky because now we really do know. The fact that it's owned by a non-Jew, I guess, applies in Chutz Laaretz, but not so much in Eretz Yisrael. And then obviously the first reason Eretz Yisrael doesn't apply. So if you are in Eretz Yisrael, which I see a number of people listening here are in Eretz Yisrael, there's no such thing as an item with a hechsher, even from Rabbanut, that's not going to be Yashin. Rabbanut will not let Chadash into the country. Because there, it's completely daraisa. There's really very little to stand on by ways of being makel. As Rabbi Goldberg can tell you also, the Star Case certifies many products in Eretz Yisrael. Now, it's baseline, you know, if it's not Chadash, if it's not Yashin, it's considered not kosher.
So Eliza is saying that they import items from America that are not Yashin and are kosher, but don't have the stamp of the Rabbanut.
So you have to watch out for that.
You can get items there that sort of bypass the Rabbanut, which I wasn't really familiar with. I thought anything that goes into the country has to have the There's probably some loopholes in the,
Loopholes in a government system? But in generally speaking, anything that has even the Yishur of Rabbanut, you can assume is Yashan in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, it's not the case. But anyways, but it's because of these reasons, all the newfound, besides Rabbi Herman's information, the fact that we really know what's going on with all the crops, that's why people more and more are turning to start being makbid on Yashan. And that really gets to the next part. We're trying to figure out, okay, so now that we decided whether we want to keep Yashan or not want to keep Yashan, so how do I figure out what is and what isn't Yashan? So someone I just noticed posted, who maintains Rabbi Herman's list today? So it is his granddaughter, Mrs. Raskam. She actually worked with him hand in hand for many years while he was alive doing his guide. And the guide is an unbelievable work. It's something that even us in the cash agencies who work through tremendous details in companies manufacturing, it even makes us cringe at the amount of detail that goes into that book, because basically the way the guide is set up is the following way, is that what they're going to do is they're going to call a company and find out what the expiration date is. Oh, one second. We have to back up for 1 minute. Let's talk about the grain harvest, as we mentioned before. Once the grains are harvested, so when do they hit the market and when do they get to the companies? When do they get to the supermarkets? When do they get to my house? And the answer is we don't really know. We know from the USDA pretty much the approximate date of when the grain started to be harvested. So let's talk about this year, 2020, which was last year. So we know, based on the USDA lists, we know that the grains pretty much started being harvested on August 6, 2020. That's when the grains in most areas in the country started being harvested. So what Rabbi Herman's list did was he said, okay, so August 6th, after that, it's too hard to put together information. We're going to consider August 6th as our cutoff date. And therefore, we're going to consider that we're going to assume that it takes approximately 2 weeks for the grain to be harvested, which is an assumption, but it's a ballpark assumption. 2 weeks of grain to be harvested, and let's say another 2 weeks or so to hit the shelves. So we're going to use August 6th as our cutoff date and say that any product that is dated past August 6th from this past year, August 6th, 2020, we're going to assume is Chadash. That's how the guide works. Now, as I mentioned, it's not a perfect science because obviously not everything is harvested on one day. And it takes time for things to hit the market, but that's how his guide is set up. And it's really, you have to work with something. Otherwise, there is no way you can know every kernel of grain, when exactly it was harvested and which product went into it. There's no way to figure that out. So his guide.
Sixth is the date that the government gives for that most of the grains in the United States were harvested already?
It's hard to say most, but that's when they say that in the large parts of the United States, that's when the farmers are all already harvesting their grain. What percent? I don't know.
Starting then or the finishing?
Starting then. Okay. Starting then, and then it goes straight to markets. So that's the date they give. So what they do is then in the guide is that they're going to go to companies, and every company by law has to have an expiration date on their product. And expiration date is based on sometimes 5 months, 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years after the date of production, how long they estimate this product will last and still remain fresh. So what they've done is they go around to the companies and ask them, how long do you code your dates, your products for? How long after production do you code your products for? And what they do is they say, okay, so let's say you have flour and you code your product for 1 year, which is pretty much classic in the flour industry. It's coded for 1 year. So they're going to say, okay, so that means any flour that's dated August 6th, 2021 let's just take flour for a second as that example. Flour is dated for 1 year typically. So they're going to say flour is dated August 6, 2021 or later. That is should be assumed to be Chadash. If it's dated August 6th or earlier, then you can assume it's Yashan. And that's how the guide is set up. So that's why reading through the guide, there's a few things that confuse everybody is that some companies do 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's every company has their own cheshbonos and how they do it. And also every company has their cheshbonos and how they date the product. Do they use a production date? Do they use an expiration date? And to make it more complicated, is they use a regular American date where they would say, let's say today is October 28th, 2020. Do they use the European system where they say today is 28th, October 2020? Do they use a Julian system? Julian system is where they, let's say January 1st is day one, December 31st is day 365. So August 6th, for example, is 218, is day 218 of the year, 218th day of the year. So you can look at a product, you see numbers, you don't know what you're looking at. And that's why it becomes a whole science in learning how to read product codes on items. And that's where Herman's guide comes into the picture to decipher that. But that's why it is a little bit complicated.
I said, Rabbi, I tell you just in advance that if anybody has questions after reading the guide, you know, they can, there's some way of contacting the people who make the list, Rabbi Herman, but they can also call the Star K.
And call the Star K. There's also yashin.com. There's a group of people who set up a website called yashin.com, and they also, you know, they have WhatsApp chat groups and emails, and they also answer questions. They take all the information from, you know, pretty much from Rabbi Herman's guide, and they have a passion for yashin, which is very impressive, and they're happy to answer questions also and helping people decipher codes. You can WhatsApp them pictures. I'm on one of their chats, and it's literally nonstop. I hope no one takes offense to that, but it's literally nonstop. People asking questions, but it's amazing because people really are interested in this, and it's something that people want to do and want to do right. But hopefully, by the time we finish, everyone will have a little bit more education and be able to understand a little bit better how to accomplish it without making yourself crazy and without getting a PhD in learning how to read expiration codes. Now, one thing I will mention is that if you do call the Star K, sometimes we will give you information that may be a little different than what you might find in Herman's guide. And the reason for that is the following, is that the reason why the Kashrus agencies never took on Yashin as a project, there's pretty much no Kashrus agency that's makbid on Yashin as a policy. Not outside of Eretz Yisrael. Maybe I think Kedasi in England. I don't think anyone in the United States, not that I know of, as a matter of policy, insists that all their items they certify need to be Yashin. They're Yashin if they certify as Yashin, they're makbid. Like our bakeries in Baltimore, we certify them as Yashin, and if we certify as Yashin, we enforce Yashin. But otherwise, the standard Star K product you pick up on the shelf, do not assume it's Yashin unless it says on the label that it's Yashin. But the reason
true for almost any agency,
right? It's true for any agency, and the reason for that is the following: is that it would take so much effort and energy on our part to figure out and keep track and maintain and enforce all the products being Yashin. It's just too much. There's just no way to practically do it. You know, you have industrial bakeries, they get in flour shipments every single day. There's no way to track that and just, you know, keep track of what's Yashin, what's not Yashin. So we end up pretty much just telling people to go with whatever dates, and even we ourselves, we rely on the dates from Herman's guide, even though it's estimations, and we really probably could drill into it more, but it's just too much work to be able to drill in more than that. But at the same time, our own products that we certify, sometimes we do know more specific dates. And therefore, we would sometimes give information that may be different than the guide because we would have more specific information. We do send them information, you know, when we have it available, but, you know, it doesn't always make it into the guide. But that's why sometimes if you do call us up, we will give you information that may be different. And the reason for that is because sometimes we do have different information. The OU is the same way. I know Ray Gorelick at the OU who oversees their Yashin certifications. I mean, he's involved in a lot of their grain companies. He also will give different dates sometimes that are printed in the book, and that's the reason, because he has different information. It's like, for example, we happen to know, and the General Mills, which is obviously one of the largest grain companies in the United States, they have many mills around the country. The mill that services the East Coast is located in Buffalo, and that mill, they don't bring in Chodesh flour at all. We know for a fact. This year, they didn't bring it in until August 26th. I think it was something like that, August 26th. So even though the Yashin guide is going to pretty much use the year cutoff date from August 6th as the code, in our bakeries, we have no problem relying on the August 25th date because we know specific information. So that's where, you know, it can get both confusing. And that's why if you call us up, we might give you a different answer. And I'm sure that just adds to the confusion. But at the end of the day, you know, everyone has to just do their best. But let's try to cut through some of the confusion now. And go through some dates and codes. Rabbi Herman's guide is available online. So Rabbi Herman, part of his psak that he had from his Rabbanim and Gedolim that he consulted with is not to use the internet and have a website. It's available by email. If anyone, I don't have the email handy, it's available by email. I think yashin.com can help you get it. It is very much available. They can email you the guide. Here is a picture of what the guide looks like.
Is the email on here?
The email might be on here. Let's see. Let's see if I can get it on here. Okay, but now let's go through some of the examples in the guide. Oh, here it is. If you have questions, here it is. It should be right here somewhere.
Well, there's phone numbers there.
There's phone numbers there, but hopefully someone will post it. I don't have it handy right here where exactly to sign up for the guide, but I'll give you some examples of how this can get a little bit confusing. Let's go, just pull up a random date here. So let's talk about Daryl-y licorice. So it's made in Australia. Okay, and I mentioned I don't know what goes on in the Southern Hemisphere, but let's just say over here it has a has a Chodesh code of October 1st, 2021, 1 year after packing. So pretty much what that means is they were able to figure out that that company brings in Chodesh only in October, and therefore they're going to give a year cutoff date from that 1 year later. Moving up a little bit, let's say Cremet Pasta Chodesh code for egg noodles is August 20, 2022, 2 years after packing, because they figured out that the semolina flour that's used in pasta has a cutoff date of August 20 from this year, and therefore they give 2 years. So the code is August 20, 2022 or earlier, then it's not, you could assume that it's Yashin and it's not going to be an issue. But that's pretty much going through this how it works. Now, as we said, it gets very tedious. So there are other resources out there, and I'm going to show you two other resources out there.
But then let me ask you a question. Is it better to buy a lot of product before becomes an issue, or just use the guide as you go through the year, or a combination of both?
So I'll tell you like this, is that it's a double-edged sword, and there's some Rabbanim who have reservations about telling people to stock up on Yashin, because let's say if you're going to stock up on flour, and I know where you're driving at, Rabbi Goldberg, if you're going to stock up on flour or other grain products and store them in your house, you might end up having an infestation issue, which I think we've discussed in the past here at the Star K. So that's why it's something that if you are going to stock up, I would recommend, you know, storing things properly, which we don't have to get into all the details of that right now. But I'll just tell you personally, from my experience a number of years ago, when I decided to explore the option of keeping Yashin and see how complicated it was. Now, we do live on the East Coast in Baltimore. Other parts of the country might not be as easy. But in general, in many parts of the United States, for sure on the East Coast, you really can find many items that are Yashin all year round. Now, it also depends on what you're looking for. So, you know, if you're going to insist on having your Cheerios, because it's the breakfast of champions, maybe that was Wheaties, but it's the breakfast of champions, then yeah, eventually that might run out. So that's something you might consider stacking up on. But if you're open to the option of eating Rice Krispies for breakfast, or if you're going to be makbid on malt, you're going to go to Kix or Rice Chex or something like that, then you have plenty of options available. You know, nobody, I don't think anybody I know, I never heard of anyone that starved to death because they decided to be makbid on Yashin. I hope I'm not wrong about that, but that's pretty much my impression. So, you know, stocking up you can do, but, you know, you have to be careful if you do it that way. And pretty much there's many items that you could find, I think, all over the country. And I'll give you a good example. Let's go to, Rabbi Goldberg, how do I get back to the presentation field here? How do I get back to the other things that I have here? Oh, here we go. I got it. Okay. Okay. So let's discuss the two grain harvests for a second, because this can help guide people a little bit in trying to figure out what items you have to makbid on, what items you don't have to makbid on. First of all, what does Chodesh apply to? We didn't even answer that question yet. So it applies to only the five grains: wheat, oat, barley, rye, and spelt. Does not apply to rice, does not apply to quinoa, does not apply to amaranth, does not apply to any of tapioca.
Buckwheat
is not a wheat. It does not apply to many, many other types of what they call grains, even though they're called grains. So there's plenty to eat, that's for sure. Now, also, in the United States, rye and spelt is the new superfoods. A lot of people eat spelt. Spelt and rye are exclusively winter crops, and therefore there is no chadash concern at all with rye or spelt. Now, rye bread many times is a mixture, so you have to know. But if you're buying rye flour or spelt, I know there's a lot of people that only eat items made with spelt. Spelt is never a chadash concern in North America. So if you're going that route, then also you have plenty to eat. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to stock up. You could buy spelt flour all year round without any concern. But I put up a post knowing about the two harvests. There's differences between what they call winter wheat and spring wheat. As we mentioned, winter wheat is planted in the fall. It's harvested in July. It's always Yashin. Now, winter wheat is what's known as low gluten. Now, gluten, as you know, is the what they call, I guess you want to be a very layman's terms. Gluten is like glue. It's very sticky. And if you have an item like bread where you want it to be like soft and mushy and that kind of a texture, you don't want to use a low gluten flour. You want to use what's known as a high gluten flour. high gluten flour would be bread flour. So spring wheat is what's known as high gluten flour. Bread flour is going to be spring wheat, and those would have a chadash concern. But if you're making cake, and you're making cake flour or things like that using cake flour, those items would not have a chadash concern either. Now, for consumers, this might sound like Chinese because you've never gone to the supermarket and seen anything that is called cake flour. And the reason for that is the following, is that the most you're going to see on the stores in the supermarket are you're going to find whole wheat flour, which is regular wheat flour. You're going to find bread flour, and you're going to find what's called all-purpose flour. All-purpose flour, they look at us lay people who know nothing about baking, and they say, we'll give you flour that's pretty much just a mixture of whatever else you want to throw in there, because you people don't know what you're doing anyway. And they call that all-purpose flour. It's a mixture of different flours. If you go to a bakery, any industrial or commercial bakery, you will not find, I mean, you might find a little bit of all-purpose flour there, but they're very specific in what they use because their recipes are very exact. So they're going to use high gluten flour for bread. They're going to use what's called cake flour for cake. And they're going to use pastry flour to make pastries. And they're going to use, you know, very specific in what they need.
Why don't they make cake flour for consumers?
Because it's not necessarily going to come out good unless you really know what you're doing. You have to use the right ingredients in cake flour because sometimes it's too low gluten. Unless you know how to manage it properly, it's not going to come out good. So they do is they make all-purpose flour, which is a little bit of this, a little bit of that, some high gluten, some low gluten. They throw it together. So you'll consistently come out and say that I love gold medal all-purpose flour because it always makes good cakes. And that's what they want. That's their purpose in doing it that way. So they may give you a flour that almost that you can't fail with it. In bakeries, they want to use something more exact, but in consumers, they give you a little bit of a mix of everything. So it's very well known that now I'm going to put up here is, how do we get back there again?
You have to just close this one first. And then you want your list?
Yeah. Okay, I got it.
Now this?
No. Oh, that's not that. This, by the way, just so you know, this is from the yoshin.com. They have a you can make that drop bigger so you can see it. They have a tool there that you can use to calculate dates and Julian dates, which makes life easier because, you know, if you don't have a smartphone for sure, you're looking at a product, you don't know how to read the code. They have a lot of helpful information in learning how to read codes for items that are not necessarily on the lists. But let's go to the Star K quick guide.
Okay, one second.
I'll give some example. There we go. So the history of this guide is very simple, is that when I looked, I was exploring the option of keeping Yashan. So I typically don't always do the shopping in my house, and I would send my wife to the store. So what happens then is, especially a couple of years ago, is that you'd send your wife or anyone to the store with Ray Herman's full, you know, 50, 60-page guide and say, here, go shopping and make sure everything is Yashan. And you're going to come home, and all she brought was rice and water, because she was too nervous to buy anything else because you can't figure out what's going on in the guide. And it gets very tedious. So I pretty much started, I went through the shopping list every week and I said, okay, these items, and I deciphered for this item, you're buying flour, make sure you look for this code. For this macaroni, look for this code. And that sort of evolved into this list, what we call our quick reference guide, which is based on Rabbi Herman's information.
So I just wanted to point out to the listeners that this is, this one of the reasons that you'd make this list is because you're one of the Star K experts in Yashan. By the way, how much does this list cost? How much does Star K charge for access to this?
It charges as much as you pay for put paper in your printer.
Right. Okay.
Rabbi Herman's guide is also available, I think, by email. They don't charge for it. If you want a hard copy, they charge for it. But this is pretty much just common products. You know, again, if your item is not listed here, it's because my wife doesn't buy it. But no, otherwise, it's pretty much the most commonly sold items that we find in the supermarkets. It's not as exhaustive as Ray Herman's list, but just deciphering the exact codes that you're going to see on these items. So if there's an item that is sold in the supermarket that we might not have, Ray Herman might not have information about, so I didn't put it on the list because I'm just going to skip it and I'm just going to buy a different brand or something like that. So let's go to the flour page because we were talking about flour. So all-purpose flour, if you're looking over here, you see Gold Medal, which is a very, very popular brand of all-purpose flour. It's all Yashan from the KC mill, which is a Kansas City mill, which is at least on the East Coast, I'm sure in the Midwest. That's one of their main mills that produces the Gold Medal all-purpose flour. So we have information from the OU, as is well known, is that the Gold Medal all-purpose flour only uses winter wheat in their mix. Now, there's many types of winter wheat, which we're not even going to get into. There's soft red wheat. There's hard red wheat. There's the amount and varieties of wheats is endless. But they do is they blend different winter wheats together to create the gold medal all-purpose flour. So if you are Makbar and Yashan, and then you can always buy the gold medal all-purpose flour from the KC mill. So it says in the code, it will say KC in the code, and then it doesn't really matter what the date is. If it says KC on top of the bag printed in the code, you know that it's Yashan. Now, it is not necessarily the case with all other brands of all-purpose flour. It's pretty much exclusive to gold medal. So that's just an example where, again, you know, you don't need to stock up on all-purpose flour because gold medal flour, I think, is available probably in every single supermarket in the entire country. So, you know, if you want to use all-purpose flour, I would not recommend stocking up on it. I would just buy it fresh whenever you need it from whichever supermarket you are and around the country, and they should have this flour there. If you don't, then...
I just want to mention, I put up the link for this list. They can see it on the chat. You can see the link for this where you can download it. And also, you know, an idea that I'm thinking while you're talking is that Yashin doesn't have to be, you know, all or nothing. I keep it or I don't keep it. You know, if it's easy enough and doesn't drive me crazy, so then, you know, I'll do it. So if the gold medal, like you're saying, all purpose is very available, so I'll just buy that one if that's available where I have it. When I go out to eat,
I know people that only eat kosher in the home. You know, it's plenty of people like that out there.
but this is, as you explained, you know, you can, there's people strict, people not strict. So
right.
Person, it's not all or nothing. It's,
right. No, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It's right. A personal decision. And we are not here to say what you should do. It's, you know, everyone has to decide for themselves in consultation with their Rabbanim, you know, what they themselves should be doing as a family. And we're here just to facilitate. If you choose to be machmir about it, then this is, you know, we're trying to make it help easier for you, as well as all the other resources that we mentioned. Again, it is becoming much more popular all over the country. I'll mention specifically, I always give a shout out to Chicago, because I know when Rav Eshever Soloveitchik and his brother Ron Soloveitchik came to the United States, and Ramesha, who was actually related to them also, Ramesha was well known to tell people that he was not Makban Yashan, but I happen to know for some inside information that after Pesach every year, he would stock up personally on oats. And they tried their best. The truth is that in those days, you know, there wasn't much Chadash on the market at all anyway. But there's a famous story with Rav Eshever Soloveitchik that somebody mentioned to him that products in the United States are not necessarily Yashan, and he was like flabbergasted, like, why they don't keep kosher in America? You know, okay, now you have to take something that a Soloveitchik says with a little bit of a grain of salt sometimes. But the truth is that you know, his Talmidim and Ravan Soloveitchik's Talmidim in Chicago particularly are super makbid on Yashan even till today. And it's interesting because of all the quote-unquote chumras and kashas that people are makbid about, there's Pas Yisrael, there's Chalav Yisrael, Bishul Yisrael, Bishul for Sfardim, those are all derabanans. And Xeris derabanans, which a lot of built-in reasons why, you know, Ashkenazim anyways are not necessarily makbid in any of them. You know, Chadash and Yashan is something that actually is deraisa. And, you know, it sounds funny, but there's people ask, is it more important to be makbid on Chalav Yisrael, more important to be makbid on Yashan? I'd have a hard time explaining to someone why it makes more sense to be makban on Chalav Yisrael than Yashan, because Yashan is certainly more chamor than Chalav Yisrael. But the Velt has not necessarily taken it that way. So if you have someone that is makban on Chalav Yisrael and on Pas Yisrael, but not, that sounds normal, but someone who's makban on Yashan, not Chalav Yisrael or Pas Yisrael, that sounds crazy. The reality is it's the opposite. Now, I'm not pushing anybody one way or another on this issue. You know, I happen to be involved in the Chalav Yisrael productions for the Star K as well. But you know, and the Star K obviously is actually makbid on everything we certify being Chalav Yisrael, although not Yashan. So I guess we're from the strange people out there.
I want to answer behind him in that question, why we Star K products are all Chalav Yisrael but not Yashan. He said that's what Rav Aaron Cutler told him to do, because that was the minhag, that was the custom.
Right. The minhag seems not to have been to be makbid on Chalav Yisrael. On Yashan, I'm sorry, and that has carried over. So again, it's a personal choice. Chalav Yisrael certainly is more popular to be machmir on, and I don't know about Pas Yisrael, I'm not sure of that one. But Chalav Yisrael certainly more.
There is a question here. Nancy's asking, what about oats? Oats, can that be chadash?
Or is it oats could be chadash. Yeah, sure, oats could be chadash. Okay. Wheat, barley, and oats could be chadash in the United States. Spelt and rye, not. So you have to check, but again, I mean, I guess it depends how fast the turnover rate is in your local supermarkets. Oats could turn over at some point, but again, you know, you want to stock up on oatmeal, just make sure you store it properly.
Simcha's question about multi-grain Cheerios. Are they Yoshin? That's a specific.
So again, they have a date code for that. And any item that has different grains in it, what they do is they go with the earliest one. So oats usually become chadash earlier than anything else. So generally, okay, guys.
Is it on your list? Is it on your list, this product?
We're actually on the cereal page right here. So if you look on the cereal page,
where is it?
I mean, just look on Malto Meal for a minute. Whoever buys Malto Meal cereals, right? just as an example. So each cereal has a different amount of time from packing to expiration. Use the list below, and then it goes like this. If it contains only oats, use July 24th. If it contains wheat only, use Yashan. If it contains barley, use that date. Now, if it contains all of them, you're going to have to go with the earliest date of July 24th.
Okay, but Cheerios is made by General Mills, right?
Cheerios is made by General Mills, yeah. So Cheerios is oats.
Purchased September 1st, is that right?
Yashan, yeah. So I don't do I have updated information? I don't think I have updated information specifically on Cheerios here yet. Let's see. But you'd have to go with the earliest date. Now, you'd have to go with the earliest date. I don't have that information on here exactly.
Okay.
When specifically Cheerios. I mean, I would go with after September 1st, unless you have information. Maybe there's updated information in the guide. I actually, as Chatoy and Masker, have not looked. But I would look in Rabbi Herman's guide and see if there's an updated date on Cheerios in there specifically. But otherwise, I would go with the regular date of oats, which this for this particular Yashan season was the cutoff date for oats was July 24th. For wheat was August 6th, and for barley was, I think, August 12th or something like that. But pretty much the way this guide is set up, and this is the most important thing I think people should realize from the guide, is that the dates in the guide are the latest cutoff times that something would still be Yashan. So whatever code, numbers, date are listed in this guide or Herman's guide, it's those or a lower number or earlier date are considered Yashan. If it's a higher number or a later date, it would not be considered Yashan. That's really the entire philosophy, and this is where everyone graduates with their PhD in understanding the guide, is that is how the guide works, is that whatever code or date, so for example, if you want to look at on the same page that we have, the Golden Bowl wonton wraps on the right column, it says code 062008. So forget about deciphering that for a minute. If it's that number or lower, then it's going to be Yashan. Okay, that's based on a Julian date. Okay, it's not important right now how to decipher it. But if it's that number or lower, then it's going to be Yashan. Two lines down, also is Wonton Food Company, 80620. And there's also a bunch of letters there in the code which are relevant. Look at those numbers. If it's those numbers or lower, then that's going to be Yashan. And that's pretty much how these guides work. Now that everyone has that information, they can graduate, and we'll send you your diploma in the mail. Cap and gown are optional.
Okay. Chasya says that multi-grain Cheerios, the date code is best if used by 22 September 2021.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Eshkol, who is actually the one who runs Yashan.com, so we appreciate that information.
Is that a year? How does that work? Is that a year?
That's expiration code. Expiration code based on however much time they give from the production date. But the amount of time they give is not necessarily as relevant to consumers. The main thing is that that's the code. It's 22 September 2021 or earlier. Data that is going to be Yashan. I'll give you another example because I happen to enjoy Life cereal. Everyone likes a little bit of L'chaim. So Life cereal is right now the code is July 18, 2021. So you want to get Life cereal is dated from July 18, 2021 or earlier, that would be Yashan. If it's later, then it would be assumed not to be Yashan. Now, we do get a lot of questions, and that is, let's say it's July 19th, 2021. Let's say I find Cheerios that's 23 of September 2021. So the answer to that question is that, you know, we're going to get into trouble for saying this, but it probably doesn't matter. Because as we mentioned, the system is really based on estimations. It's not exact. However, if you want to be 100% sure, then go with the date that's posted, right? But between me, you, the doorknob, and the people watching this, Lamaisa, if it's one day off, and probably in many cases, even up to a week or 2 weeks, it many times probably won't matter. But again, we can't take responsibility for saying that publicly, even though we just did. But we're not going to take responsibility to guarantee you that it's not going to be Yashan.
We'll just deny it.
We'll deny we said it. Yeah, you know, this, you know, we could deny anything, even if it's recorded. That's the way it works, you know.
Okay, the question is the date stated up to and including, or is it no good from that day
up on? Up to and including.
Up to and including, okay.
That is the last good day, and you can assume it's considered 100% Yashin.
Okay, we had a question about licorice.
So licorice in the United States is all pretty much made from winter wheat. You know, all the Twizzlers and things like that are made from winter wheat. So it's not really much of an issue. From different parts of the world, you know, it could be different.
I have a licorice company that's not necessarily so, though.
Oh, really? Okay. I only eat Twizzlers. I'm sorry.
But you can figure it out by the...
You can figure it out. Yeah, you can figure it out.
Yeah, if it's,
Now, something I know a lot of people are asking about is, I get this question a lot. Someone called up and wanted to know if scotch is Yashin, because scotch, as we know, is made from barley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If anyone doesn't get it, I guess we drink too much already. So anyways, scotch is usually aged. And you know, if it's not aged, it was just made out of the straight out of the barrel, then you probably don't want to drink it, as the case with most types of schnapps. You know, a 12-year-old Glenlivet is definitely Yashin. No question about it. The 30-year-old is even more Yashin and is a lot more expensive too. But
the thing is, Rabbi Tanya, you're saying the joke with a straight face, so we're not.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I should laugh. But anyways, yeah. Pretty much all schnapps you can consume all schnapps is going to be Yashin, because it's, you know, it's almost they're all aged. You know, unless you're picking it up in a, you know, I don't want to, whatever. Unless you're paying like a dollar a bottle or something like that. If you're paying any significant amount of money for any reputable schnapps, bourbons or anything like that, they're pretty much all going to be Yashin.
That doesn't mean that they're all kosher. That's not to say that they're all kosher.
No, I'm not saying they're all kosher. Not at all. Right. I mean, bourbon especially, you know, bourbon especially, because bourbon is made from corn and rye. Neither one of those have any chadash concerns. So if you're not sure, you can always buy bourbon. But scotch, yeah, I have not seen any scotch ever that is of chadash concern. Beer, however, beer would be a chadash concern. Beer, as we mentioned, is made with barley malt. But barley malt does not seem to become an issue, you know, until sometime in November or December at Sam Adams, which we certify. They don't even bring in the Chadash barley malt until usually around Thanksgiving time. And then they start making the beer from it. So, you know, you have time to stock up on beer. You know, if you're planning a Shalom Zachar, you know, some point in after January, February, and you want to stock up on beer now, then, you know, by all means. But anyways, beer would be an issue. We discussed flour already. People ask a lot about crackers and pretzels because, as we mentioned earlier, crackers and pretzels generally are made from low gluten flour because they have to be crunchy and not soft. So the assumption, I heard a lot of people have this assumption that anything that's a hard consistency like matzah, crackers, pretzels must be winter wheat. It's not necessarily the case. We've seen it in many situations. I had a company that made hard pretzels and was using spring wheat. And I asked them, why using spring wheat? Wouldn't it make more sense to use winter wheat? And they looked at me like, no, I mean, like, I don't know. They don't even know what I was talking about. But so, you know, generally speaking, you know, even in items that, you know, people would think should be made from exclusively winter wheat, you really should check if you're being makan Yashin. Now, matzah, I have yet to see a matzah that is not made from Yashin flour. And that's because the companies who make matzah know that everyone's eating it on the first day of Pesach, pretty much. I think that's the minute in Klal Yisrael to eat matzah on the first day of Pesach, which is going to be before the first day of Chol Hamoed Pesach. I think usually the calendar falls out that way, or Rabbi Heber can correct me if I'm wrong. And so matzah, I don't know of a single matzah company, you know, machine or hand that makes sure that their flour is always Yashin. And it's not necessarily so easy. They sometimes have to really try and put an effort to do it, but they all pretty much make sure matzah is going to be Yashin.
I want to mention that we're going to be winding down because we come to the end of our webinar. If anybody has any questions, they can chat with us. If anybody wants to join us here on the screen, we have the ability to, if you have a video camera or even just a mic, we can bring you in live like that. So we'd be happy to have you join us, ask your question. What about whole wheat matzah? Peretz wants to know.
Also.
Okay. What's the most common question we get about Yashin?
What's the most common question we get about Yashin? Is this product Yashin or not? You know, very simple question, and sometimes it's not necessarily so easy to answer. People want to know about restaurants, Star K restaurants, other restaurants. Can we figure out if it's Yashin or not? You know, this is also information that's, it's, you know, it's a really a case by case basis. That's, you know, people want to know, going to a chasna certify one of your caterers, is all the food going to be ashen? And the answer is really, you got to speak to the mashgiach at the event. There's, unless, you know, we're sort of taking, unless they're asking it to be certified as yashan, it's not, don't necessarily assume that anything that really any heksher certifies is going to be yashan.
Right. And I think that we mentioned in our, we've had videos about travel back in the pre-corona days. We had webinars about traveling and what to do on planes and on hotels and things. And one of the things we pointed out is that you have Israelis coming to the United States, and they assume in Eretz Yisrael everything is Yashin. So they go on the plane back to Eretz Yisrael, and they hear that it has a very good hashgacha, you know, they can eat it, everything is 100%. But they don't realize that it's often not Yashin.
Right.
And it doesn't, there's no claim made of Yashin, but somehow when they get on the plane and they're going to Eretz Yisrael, they sort of, they
coming from Eretz Yisrael, yeah, we have people complain to us, and we understand their complaint, but they have to get used to the fact that outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's not everything is Yashan.
I once discussed this with one of the Rabbanim Machshirim, and he said, well, what did they do when they went to restaurants or they bought products in the United States when they were here? They didn't make that assumption. They had to look into each thing.
People don't necessarily realize that. It's funny how they wake up and after traveling, I know someone who's traveling for years, for decades, and woke up and says, hey, wait a second. In Chutzlarts, they're not makbar on Yashin. How could that be, right? And the answer is, yeah, that's right. The reality, right. And but it's something that people don't realize.
On the plane, you usually get what we call a hemisha hechsher, you know, and you sort of assume that that's Yashin, but that's not at all the case.
No, hemisha hechshkos are not necessarily makbar on Yashin. In fact, the Hasidish world now, and when you say hemisha hechshkos here in Eretz Yisrael, you mean two different things. In Chutzlarts, in America, you mean Hasidish hechshkos usually. In Eretz Yisrael, you don't necessarily mean Hasidish, you mean Yerushalmi or Litvish hechshkos. It could be anything. But let's talk about in America, the Hasidish hechshkos are not makbar on Yashin because Hasidim actually their Messiah is actually not to be makbar on Yashin at all. They're very makbar, obviously, in Chol Yisrael and Pas Yisrael and things like that. But Yashin is not necessarily something that they're makbid on. Now, it could be by default, many of their items in the Haimish world are Yashin because the companies want it that way. Like, for example, Mealmart, it's certified by the Nirbanter. All their stuff, this year, I think, every year, it's always been like that. All their, anything that they make, is they made Yashin. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be that way. I believe Salmon's might be the same way. But take a company like Kemach, right? Kemach flour, right? The Kemach flour, the main company that everyone associates with being as a Haimish grain company, their items do not always stay Yashan at all. They actually just issued an update a few days ago. We're telling you the cutoff dates in a lot of their products is not necessarily going to stay Yashan the whole year. Mm-hmm. So you really have to, if you're going to be Makban Yashan, these are items that you really have to check for. And that's where the guides come in.
Right, and getting back to the planes for a second, the reason that was explained to me why not everything there is Yashin, because the companies that put it together are not making every single item there. They may be making the chicken and the meat, but the rolls or the cake, they're buying from suppliers. It's just not always available to buy, and meet. It has to also meet the standards of the airline. The airline has certain, you know, size and consistency, whatever. The airline has certain requirements. And it's just not available for Yashin, so they don't make it for Yashin, and they don't, and it's not Yashin. Okay, let's finish up these last few questions here, Rabbi Temler. Gluten-free oat flour.
So if it has oat flour, gluten-free flour couldn't be one of many things. It could have oat flour, and it could just be tapioca and rice. If it's just tapioca and rice, it's not going to be a Yashin issue. If it has oat flour in it, then it wouldn't need to be. You would have to check the code.
It's not on the list, but okay.
Not everything's on the list. You know, there's millions of products that are on the shelves. If we put millions, or Rabbi Herman's guide put millions of items in their book, you know what the size of that book would look like?
Okay. Simcha asks, Chol Yisrael aside, do candy bars have the same rules how to figure out the Yashin?
Yes.
For example, if they have wafers.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
If you know how long they code it to be expire, so then you can figure out it. Let's just take if it was a wafer, so you'd go with wheat. So you know if you could figure out that it was a year after the year, the expiration code is a year after manufacturing, so it would be August 6, 2021 or earlier. It could be 8 months. Now someone had asked also, someone actually was very involved in Yashin, wanted to know about wheat beer, because wheat beer is becoming very popular. It's not just barley, it contains wheat, if there's a way to figure it out. And the answer is no. The reason is because every brewery, a lot of beer companies, we know this from the chametz issue we dealt with the beers, is that every beer company has a different amount of time they give. Some do 5 months, 6 months, 8 months, and without knowing that specific, you know, how long they code their beers for, it's very hard to figure out. But you would go with the regular cutoff date for wheat if you could figure that out.
Mm-hmm. And next question is, there are many companies that have not for Pesach matzah. So you said that all the matzah is yoshin. What about the ones that say chametz on them?
They are also yoshin. They're really using the same flour. The only difference is usually they're not cleaning off the equipment. So they're not, that should be assumed to be chametz. But they pretty much produce them at the same time as the Pesach matzah.
Mrs. Eshkol put up a WhatsApp a group over here.
That's one of the Yashin groups. Yeah,
you can join that with all your questions. Mrs. Hachzeh is asking, what about vodka? Some is wheat, some is not. Well,
so again, it'll be the same thing. I mean, vodka usually is aged also at some point.
Aged more than, than a year, so it wouldn't be a problem. Okay, we reached our limit for the webinar,
it's getting old. Topic's getting old. Okay, yeah. Got to end off with some joke.
We start off and end with the same joke. Okay. Yeah. I want to remind everyone that first of all, thank you for joining. I think Rabbi Tendler, you'll agree, did an excellent job on this topic and really explained it very well. Yisher Koyach, thank you. And we recorded this. Hopefully, we will put it up in a couple of days on our website. At star-k.org/videos. I want to welcome you back, hopefully, in a month, the end of November, the last Wednesday, which is the day before Thanksgiving. I don't know what the topic will be, maybe whether or not you can have turkey at your Thanksgiving dinner, which is a question on its own. But thank you again for joining, and everybody take care and be safe. Be well. Bye-bye.